And we're back.
Hi, Calvin. Calvin, we've just been talking in an ongoing conversation, which I find fascinating. You've been talking about who you are, what you set out to discover, what you discovered, bringing us now to a fourth question, a fourth part of this series of interviews. How can others use what you have found? And maybe I can just, for those who are listening, recapitulate what we found in the first three parts of the interview. First you spoke about how you were in school, bored, learned to doodle, discovered triangles, and later saw that triangles gave you fundamental new insight that you unfolded in the second part of the story, where basically you explain that you are looking at triangle, at squares, as everybody does, because that's what everybody's taught in school, but somehow you were able to swap that, to switch that, to looking at triangles, equilateral triangles, instead. As a result of which, for you, everything fell in place. A whole new understanding kicked in, driven by what at that point we came to interpret as activating the right brain to boost up the logical understanding. And in the third part of the story, it led to the realization that with those triangles you could build models, and with those models you could model atoms, and every quantum, every quark, every quirk, every particle came into play. You applied it to electromagnetism, you applied it to the physics, you applied it to the chemistry, you applied it to classical physics. So basically you saw how using those little models which you could cut and paste, which everybody can cut and paste together, you can see how atoms form molecules, form matter. In between, you also already pointed out that as a result, you can see that there is a large difference between energy and mass and matter, and that it's really important to make distinction between those levels, and that you learned how to use different color codings to point that out. You've already described that in working it out, you wrote it all down in a way that other people could follow it, could learn from it, could come to understand it as well.
Certainly hope so.
Which comes to the question for now, how can others use that? Of course, it is evident that they can already make use of everything you have published and presented. It is freely available on the internet. It's a lot of work. It is a lot of reviewing, a lot of redoing even. So in that way, they can learn while you go and learn while they go. But please tell me a bit more about how you imagine that others can make use of this.
For sure.
How can this help others?
Thanks for that summary, Otto. That was a great summary of what we've been discussing. In a succinct way, I suppose I often liken the work I've done in these five books to translating the Bible in the 15th century from Latin and Greek into English. What it's done in presenting this new geometry and how it works is it's taken away all the mystery of having to learn the math or having to understand probabilities and quantum fuzziness and or chemical bonding, things like this that are taught at school, and distilled it right down to a simple piece of paper that you can just cut out and join together. You can do this from preschool onwards, so it becomes natural. Because in writing the books, not only did I translate it from the headier intellectual mathematics, higher level maths and physics of university levels, down into geometric shapes, I also made corrections to the erroneous assumptions that have been developed over the centuries in physics and mathematics, because now we have that geometry that holds the key to understanding, and in fact to everyone being able to cut out their own shapes, join them together and see what they make. They'll make all the fields and all the particles that we know. They'll make all the elements that they're familiar with, carbon, oxygen, aluminium, uranium if they like. They can make a model of that. They can learn how the atom works in an electromagnetic sense, and they can distinguish between mass and matter and how it interacts as flat sheets of energy versus solid chunks of matter, and the role that charge plays in making all that come about. But in doing that, what I hope to do is not only re-educate people as to what's really happening on all these levels of physics, but I'm hoping that they'll pick up the same spark that I got from discovering these things and learning these concepts, and go off in their own way, just like science has always done, where one discovery leads to a multitude of other discoveries as the scientific breakthrough is picked up and translated into other fields and technologies. There's a number of key technologies that come out naturally from my work. There's understandings of how to convert matter into energy like the stars do, and that's the current physical experiments I'm working on at the moment. That's the one that I feel best will serve mankind, by getting rid of the need for nuclear power stations or using coal or oil for power. We can get rid of all these toxic radioactive wastes. We can have clean energy for everyone, anywhere. And we can use that energy to do a multitude of things, to develop new technologies, to clean water supplies, even to create individual elements, to have oil on tap if we wish, or water on tap anywhere we wish it to be in the world. The understanding that comes from my 5 years of work will be nothing compared to what the next century will be like, building upon those 5 years of work. And that's really what I want to see come out, which is why I've put it out, all my work, free to the web. I still retain my copyrights, but I do that just to stop people developing patents and limiting technology for commercial gain. All the information I've developed and discovered is freely out there for anyone to pick up. For a chemist to say, I want to go off and delve deeper into the DNA processes, or I want to understand how a particular disease replicates itself, I want to build a model of a particular virus, all that's now possible. We've got the basic 3D models. We can build on it from there, and the understanding and knowledge just explodes.
It's amazing, huh? In a way, you create a kind of Swiss pocket knife for not just for science, but for sciencing. Yeah. It's not just that everybody can do better what they do, but it is also implicitly a language by which everybody can understand everybody. It's like a de-Babylonic confusion filter. The same what you say, that you can actually from this level communicate directly with molecules, no, with atoms, and thus work with molecules. Exactly that is what happens in cells, by the way. So you can actually understand the cell biology of how information and matter are connected, and you can use it, and everybody can use it, because it cannot be monopolized.
Exactly. It's a restart or a reboot, if you like, in scientific understanding for everyone, irrespective of where they live or even what level of education they have at present. You don't need to understand tensor mathematics to now understand gravity or how the atom works. You could simply pick up my book and begin to read it and understand the basics, ask the questions. I'll supply the answers, or someone else can. But even children, and it's probably better for the children to pick it up before they have to learn about squared numbers as being squared and then having to be re-educated. It is better that we start at the basics of our education system and introduce it. As I've said in the previous discussion, I have no doubt that using this geometry, you can teach university level physics, including general relativity in a unified theory sense, to children that are pre-high school. They could easily absorb it from the geometry and understand, make and understand these models and how they work. It becomes so much simpler. And then when you've grown up with this as basic knowledge, the things that those children will then think of themselves and how they will apply it will astound us no end. It's another scientific revolution in the process, if you like. And it's certainly an exciting time for what's lying ahead. The things that I can see to do and to create is almost limitless. The only technology I haven't been able to figure out of science fiction so far is a transporter. So food replicators, traveling faster than light, all that sort of stuff, talking to other life forms across any distance in real time, all physical and eminently possible technologies. We just have to learn to master our understanding of physics and apply it.
You've already been working on some of that. In the earlier talks we had, said, okay, I have something I still need to sort out in my lab. So for you, this form of science is not just a mental mathematics. It is not the tinkering physics. It is not the pasting and cutting of models. But you're also working on machineries, if I understand it right.
For sure. Like I've said before, this dog keeps gnawing at the bone. Now that I've figured out the basics and I've applied it to chemistry and all the other fields, and I've finally managed to get the basic books to the stage and the level that I'm happy with and put them out there for everyone, the next obvious thing is to move from a theoretical basis into an experimental basis where, using the knowledge that I've gained, I now start to produce some of these practical devices. And true to form, I don't just take on the easy challenges. I've gone for the hardest one of all, and that is replicating how stars work. What's called in modern physics fusion at present, my theory clearly shows that it's not a fusing process. There is no fusion taking place, and it's in fact a process that's we've had available for a number of years, over a century now, but we've ignored it because of the quirks and the way science advanced over the past century. Tesla did some work on it. Others before him were doing work on it. They've all abandoned it because we went to solid-state devices and we didn't understand transverse versus longitudinal waves and how to create them and the roles that they play. We didn't have a clear understanding of mass and matter and charge and how they work to bring about the physics of our universe. So I've set myself the ambitious goal of building myself a little what I call a pinch reactor, and that will it'll kill two birds with one stone. One, it will give the world clean limitless energy, and the second one is it validates obviously the theoretical work that I've done to date, because it'll be based on all that theoretical work. But once we have clean limitless energy the way the sun makes it, we can then develop a number of other technologies very quickly and easily from those sources. And we can propagate these sources around the world wherever they're needed at whatever scale. There's also ways of storing this energy in small or massive amounts, as in suitable for torches or suitable for cars, homes, cities. And using the physics I've discovered, we store the energy as mass in matter. So it becomes like a kilogram of energy can be stored as a kilogram of granite. Exactly, it weighs the same. It has no radioactivity. Granite was probably a poor example, but something that's not a threat to us, like a kilogram of uranium would be. We have the knowledge based on the theory how to do that. What we need now is to build the energy source that will get us off these polluting energy sources, fix the climate change problems that we're creating for ourselves, and clean up the pollution that we've poured out all over the planet trying to meet our energy needs. So I saw it as the most pressing problem. It's the biggest one to make on a limited budget and working the way I do, but I've solved the theory of everything so far working on the same budget, so I'm confident I'll crack this nut as well. It's just a matter of time and perseverance.
Well, one of my friends once told me that I'm the richest man that he knows. Because he saw the richness of how it all connects and the experience of that. So that makes you the richest man as well in your whole experience. You are so rich in seeing that everything is a resource, every thought is a resource. But in while you're talking, basically you're also the happiest man that you can be. Because you keep on seeing all the solutions, and essentially you realize that's also what you told again and again. You're a problem solver. Problems are your food. You go for them. You get the fuel out of it.
It's stimulation, and I guess that harks back to the school days where I was easily bored. Yeah. I learned what I had to learn, and it didn't interest me. It no longer stimulated me. I found doodling more stimulating. I then did work as an electrical engineer, telecommunications, and after a while that stopped to stimulate me, where it became just going through the motions, doing the same thing over and over, working to a regimented formula. I like to improve and better things. That's just the way I am. I'm not so good mechanically with my hands, but if I can see a problem and I can use my head to figure out a way around it, or to reduce the problem itself, I'll do it every time. And this is no different. Once I had the basics of the triangle and that self-confidence and belief in it mushroomed into the five books, I then had the confidence to say to the world, here it is. I'm not out of this for the money. Look at it, critique it, fire the questions, have a go at me, try and prove it wrong, prove it right, whatever you want. I'm off to prove it right. But
yeah, that's not even an interesting discussion at that level, because it's not about proving right or wrong, because with more uses, more possibilities come out. As you said, in you testing your work, you realized that you weren't right earlier. But then also, you know, you weren't wrong earlier. It was just that suddenly you saw there was more meaning to it, more different meanings to it, and thus different meaning to it than you thought before. I think many of us have realized that you learned something, and then you see another part of it, and more meaning comes out, and you can do more with it. And what you found, you've now brought it to a level so that others can make full use of it. They can read what you wrote, can follow your understandings as a result of that. More important, they can cut and paste with the template models that you also made available. your whole website is a song and dance of that kind of understanding, which you now have learned to enjoy. And I hope that at some point we could take you up on that invite to, that you stroll us through your lab and basically point out everything, show what it means, and that people can also start to play around with it in that manner. And have very concretely about making it useful to others. In the Netherlands, there is a group coordinated by Frank Bonte. It's a zero-point energy group, and it is a group of people who I imagine would really enjoy to work with what you show. They already studied Tesla, Bearden, and many others, and many of them have been working in the fields of electricity in its many forms. Many have realized that the relationship between electricity and magnetism is not as advertised in the school books. Quite a number realize that there is actually something like the relationship between a signal wave and a carrier wave, and that information and matter are very directly connected. And quite a number of them are actually building stuff or looking at stuff that has been built, but they fall back on the problems in the theories that the books provide, and also the mercantile interests which many inventors are still short-circuited by. And so I can imagine that it would be really neat if at some point maybe we could just simply set up a presentation in which you can do a Skype broadcast with or for that whole group, because that technology now exists. Because they really would like to build the kind of things that you describe and are working on. And they're not just the group, there are many groups in many countries who are doing that. So, as I mentioned before, the power of your, say, mental technology, the geometry with the many colors and the many layers, the most important power of it is that it can be a unifying language for every form of science and every form of research. And that makes it a real powerful tool. As I mentioned before, it's like that Swiss pocket knife with all the bits and pieces you can pull out, and it can do all of these things, all of it.
Yeah.
And you just, in a way, stumbled into it because you just went into it.
I went into it, yeah. I got excited and I haven't stopped.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, a lot of my work, when it's presented, I mean, like, I use the analogy of translating the Bible from Latin into mm-hmm. English as to what I've done here. And in fact, the equilateral geometry we've spoken about is nothing more than Planck's constant, or zero-point energy, zero-point field as they term it. This is what they've been looking for and trying to describe. But one of the big things I had to struggle with early in the piece was, having discovered this and worked out this theory, what was the best approach to getting it out to the world? People approached me to patent different things and all the rest, and it didn't take me long to sit down and figure out that that's where Tesla failed. Tesla had the basics of the technology. He put out the experiments, created his devices, but he still didn't understand what was happening. And more to the point, he couldn't explain it in a physics sense, how his results were obtained and how his equipment was working, which led to all this speculation that exists right up until today about what was really happening. Was it transverse waves? Was it longitudinal? So in the QED book, I went to great lengths to explain and elaborate the difference between Tesla's work and our current work with transverse waves, or Hertzian waves if you like, what Maxwell's equations were showing us, how they relate to the geometry. And I also had to sit down and really assess long and hard the best approach so that the entire world can benefit from it. And the only way that the entire world can benefit from it is if the person who discovered the theory jealously holds on to his copyright to the original idea and the theory itself, and gives it out to the world without any patents in place. Bearing in mind the eventual power source that the world will be using is just replicating the sun, so you can't patent that. But there will be no doubt other people that will try and patent different things. By having the foundational equilateral geometry of Planck's constant shown throughout my work, and the models of the atoms, electrons, how they work, I've effectively ruled out people patenting things like energy storage devices based on protons and electrons to store energy safely, things like that, so that they become part of open source free knowledge to the entire world. And at the same process, by writing out the theory before doing the practical experiments, I've covered the problem that Tesla had, which is that he couldn't explain his work. And the same problem that Einstein had, which was that he could explain the theory, but he has no practical outcomes to his work, just like string theory has no practical outcomes to the theory itself. Mm-hmm. So part of the 5-year odyssey was making sure that I did the best possible work that explained every aspect of the science that I could theoretically, and now I go on with a 4-year head start on those studying the work afresh to build the practical devices that the world can benefit from, so that when it's all done and dusted and I'm buried and my ashes are all spread out, I know that no one's going to try and control the energy of the world for any country or any person like JP Morgan wanted to do, or like we have done to this date, where we've invented a new technology like nuclear power, but we've got so many patents on it that people can't get the benefit out of it without paying a huge impost financially. And usually the impost is the greatest on those that can afford it the least. I'm trying at least to circumvent that sort of situation arising. What I've given here in all my work is detailed models of everything from the zero-point field right up to DNA and how stars work and planets form, things like that, how they interact. All the basic mechanics from which we can expand, and hopefully it sets an example for others to follow through the same way, because in my opinion, the last 100 years, science has leaned more heavily towards patenting ideas and possible discoveries that we've, and commercializing them, that we've lost sight of what science should really be about, which is why they've completely overlooked what I've done.
Yeah, maybe I can link up on that, because I would be inclined to say that that's not science, but it is money banking. As you look at science, it is clear that money controls science in the same way that there are doctors who are trying to get rich of profiting from diseases. And if you could get money, bank money, out of the equation, most of the problems are solved, and most of the people who are actually trying to do good work are no longer hindered by the limitations which are created, controlling, steering, and limiting, crippling their work via money. And it's really wonderful that in your work you realized that and stepped out of that money constraint, and as a result of which, in 5 years, have been able to piece together so much of all of it, connecting the atomics with the cosmology. You're still working on showing how it works in the biology and consciousness.
Yeah, I've got very clear ideas on that, and I've worked out the basics, but I've still yet to put pen to paper, so to speak, and formulate the final biology ebook.
Yeah, could we at some point pick that up later? And to reasons for that, because it is a story in itself. And also, sure. Here we are again at the end of a half hour of the story, so it's very good to prevent that we don't get into the crumpling sounds that otherwise might come up a bit later. And if it is okay with you, I'd like to sort of round off this episode of the interview, but also had this whole series of four interviews. We have now had the fourth part, which is described how others can use what you have found, and basically it's immense. They can follow what you've been doing, they can cut and paste the models, they can come to understand, like you did, that at the smallest atomic levels, the principles which you describe so nicely, so colorfully in your website, in your books, they actually explain it all, how it hangs together. They show more than that. They show that we need to make a distinction between matter and mass and energy, and as a result of that, we can make better use of what we're doing. You already described that makes it possible to prevent the pollution, but also to correct pollution, such as neutralizing the radiation problems.
Yeah.
And you mentioned so many examples where this can be used that I'm not going to repeat it. It simply is a tool by which essentially we can correct some of the understandings that we all collectively run into science. Basically because people still look at squares rather than triangles. When they look at the triangles, you found that then everything falls in place. Everything becomes logical, everything becomes simple, everything becomes coherent. You end up with a language which can be used to communicate between all of the branches of science, but also it resolves the conflicts between understanding and practicalities.
Yeah.
So I'd also like to put that fourth part together with the further three parts of this interview series. And again, I thank you very much for telling your tale, in which you started by speaking of your learning and essentially the learning curve to get away from boredom and to stay connected to your own feeling. And in the second part, you realize that in following your feeling, you had a switch in your insight, basically represented in a transition from stopping looking at squares and starting looking at triangles, as a result of which everything fell in place. In the third part, you then showed that everything known then becomes understandable in one integral form. One description, one tetrahedral model. And in the fourth part, you said, well, yeah, we can apply it to anything and everything. And more than that, people can use it because you make it freely available. So there is no limitation in the way that people can apply that. So from that perspective, I'm really glad that you're doing this work. I'm really glad that we could have this talk. And I thank you very much for putting all of the work up, having done the work, and talking about the work as we did now.
It's been a pleasure, Otto.
I'd like to just to round off the rounding off, so to say, ask you if you would be willing to at some point pursue some of the topics. Which topics came up, why you spoke, there were some ideas that I had about links in what I've discovered about the consciousness, the cell decisions, cell divisions, freedom of choice. It seems to me that in what you have, that can be integrated quite directly. You spoke of the practicals that you're working with, Implicitly, we have had so many different topics which already came into play but were not unfolded as yet. Would you be willing to at some point continue some of this talking?
Oh, by all means. There's that's one of the best things about the theory of everything. That once you have this Rosetta geometry, the equilateral geometries, it allows you to expand and talk on a lot of different topics and build the knowledge up and have some great discussions on fields where up until now they've been so speculative that a lot of people consider them to be philosophical, whereas in fact we can now bring them back and add some physical tangibility to these processes of human consciousness, how fields can interact instantaneously over great distances. Many of the things that are even pseudoscience or paranormal to most people now, we can give a solid foundation, a solid physics foundation to all these topics, and there's a lot we can discuss.
Gladly. Again, thank you so much for the work, and thank you so much for the art of the presentation, and the time of the presentation, and thank you for the talk we had now, and I really would like to continue that.
It's been a pleasure, Otto, and thank you for your kind words.
So if it's okay with you, I'd like to end the recording now. After that, I'd like to come back to you so that we can sort of evaluate a bit and plan a bit, if you agreed on that.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thank you. Be right back.